Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. If you're a regular listener to this program, you'll already know how passionate I am about boys and men. Yes, I support women all over the world, like I support my daughter and my granddaughter. However, the statistics we're actually seeing now are of great concern. And as we approach International Men's Day, I've seen recent global research, particularly the one spanning 75 studies, 30 countries, and over 106 million men, which revealed the true impact of relationship breakdown on male suicide. The findings are heartbreaking. Divorced men are nearly three times more likely to die by suicide than married men. Separated men under 34 are eight times more likely to die by suicide. And among young Australian men, relationship breakdown has overtaken mood disorders as the most common trigger. 96% of studies also linked traditional masculine norms, which we've spoken about on this program, like emotional suppression, to increased suicide risk. It's clear that the old narrative of suck it up has failed. What we need now is a culture that encourages men to speak up, to be vulnerable, and to support one another through honest, meaningful conversations. My guest today, Tim Hewson, is leading that cultural shift. A passionate advocate and educator, Tim is the founder of Mongrels Men, an award-winning mental health charity that equips men with the tools, support, and confidence to take control of their well-being and prevent suicide. With 27 years in leadership roles with some of the world's biggest financial institutions, Tim turned his corporate experience and strategy into a mission to create mentally healthier workplaces, communities, and humans. Welcome, Tim. It's so great to have you on the program today. How important was health and well-being for your family when you were a child?
Yeah, I can remember as a young boy watching my father run up and down the sidelines playing soccer with a bunch of blokes, and it was probably at an age where I was too young to really appreciate it. I remember my mum playing netball when I was about the same age. My father was always very, very active, and I think, you know, encouraged us to be part of team sports. And when I say us, I'm talking about my brother and my sister, my broader family. It was always an active part of our Christmas and family get-togethers. We'd be throwing frisbees, we'd be playing cricket, we'd be kicking a footy. There was always something around activities. And I think that kind of physical activity gave us not just a way to connect, and whether we knew it or not, a way to do things that were good for us. We ate pretty plainly and well and healthily. And so whether or not I knew it, I think some of those key attributes of health and well-being from food to exercise were ingrained into me from a very, very young age.
When we look at activity and nutrition, they're key components to our mental health and well-being as well. How do you think having your parents model that type of behaviour helped you through your teen and adolescent years?
Yeah, critically important, right? Like we are the product of the five closest people in our orbit. And if those two are our parents and we are watching, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, and absorbing what they do and how they behave, and that's what they say, what they do, the sports they play, what they eat, of course that is going to have an impact on us. I know more broadly, you know, when we talk about men, 50% of blokes don't do enough exercise. They drink too much. They don't get out and engage in community activities and sports. And so if we can drive through role modeling, you know, the role that movement, it doesn't have to be exercise, just some form of movement and the impact it can have, we talk about the gut being the second brain. You know, what we do and the activity we have and what we eat and consume from a nutritional point of view can have a huge impact on our mental health and well-being.
Yes. And this is where two worlds have collided for me, because mental health and well-being has always been a huge part of my life. And I played sport as a young person, but the older we get, the busier we get, when we become parents, that often falls to the wayside. How do you think life impacts what we do and how we turn out in our adult life?
Yeah, maybe if I speak to my own example, you know, I was lucky enough to go to school where sports was compulsory. I played compulsory school team sports until the age of about 17. I then left team sports. Anything I did was kind of individual pursuit. It was playing tennis against a mate. It was playing golf, you know, continuing to ride my skateboard or surf. And it was all about me. It wasn't till I was in my early to mid 40s, and I was watching my eldest son run up and down the sidelines with this huge smile on his face. And I realized that I didn't have anything in my life at that stage, like that apart from my family and apart from my work, unfortunately, that put this huge smile on my face that I had for nearly 20 years or more missed out on the benefits of connecting with other blokes, participating in team sports, running around, connecting. And I know that from, you know, the 15 years that even our middle-aged bloke soccer team has been together, that just that simple exercise of meeting up to train once a week, to having an opportunity to connect with others, to having the support of the team has actually saved lives within our soccer team.
Why did you then make that next move, stepping away from a corporate career to advocating for men's mental health and well-being?
Yeah, I've been doing things, organising events and activities, opportunities for blokes to come together since about 2008. And for a long time, it was just an annual golf day. Once that soccer team had been created, once I had guys coming up to me and saying things like, "For the first time in my life, I have 90 minutes to myself where I'm not a father, a husband, a boss, an uncle. I don't worry about tax and P&Ls. It's my 90 minutes on the field." Or, you know, "If you didn't organise for me to turn up to training in the games, I wouldn't be here." You know, this idea that having somewhere to go, someone to talk to, and the support of others around you can literally save lives. And so in addition to seeing the impacts, the positive impact that, you know, regularly playing soccer and having the support of a soccer team, you know, someone to support you on and off the field, whilst going through my own separation and divorce, I was isolated, lonely. I had nobody that I would consider a friend that I could reach out to. And it wasn't until a mate of mine pulled me kind of off the couch, out down to the beach, got me running and walking and talking up and down DY Beach. And, you know, the more we talked, the better we felt, the deeper we got, the better emotionally, physically, and mentally we started to feel over a period of time. And I started to look at men's health, men's mental health, the impact of what I had been doing in bringing blokes together for golf through the soccer. And in 2021, decided to form a community on the Northern Beaches to intentionally put out invitations and opportunities for blokes to just turn up and see what happens. And blokes came from everywhere. And really, really quickly, we expanded from DY into Manly, across into Bondi, up into Queensland. And there were blokes reaching out because they wanted connection. They wanted to start moving. They wanted to focus on their health and well-being, but they needed an excuse, a reason, or an opportunity to turn up. To be completely honest with you, about 60% of those blokes came because they were encouraged by a female in their life, their wife, their partner, a sister, an auntie, a colleague, or a friend, to get out of the house, to connect with other blokes, to get moving, to have something outside of their family networks, outside of work for themselves, something else that they didn't have to drive, the social interaction, and to just take the mental load away from them in having to worry about their husbands and their mental health and well-being.
You mentioned that you went through a divorce, which can be a very difficult time, particularly for men. And in fact, a recent study that showed that across 30 countries, more than 106 million men have been through a breakdown, which can have a massive impact on their risk for male suicide. And I think the title of your writing was "Breakups Can Be a Death Sentence for Men." obviously you've done something proactive, but how did your relationship breakdown impact your mental health particularly?
To be fair, I think I had mental health challenges before my relationship breakdown, but I would have to admit that they significantly contributed to that. And when I say a history of mental health, you know, I spent nearly 20 years living with fear, shame, ignorance, and embarrassment around anxiety, having daily panic attacks, and without doing anything about that, without getting any help, professional help and support, you know, that evolved into what was later determined as being depression. And so, you know, you stack mortgages, kids, marriage, new jobs and work pressures and everything else that kind of goes on in most people's lives on top of those things which are just being consistently compressed, ignored and denied. And of course, you know, that plays out in a range of different ways. And if you were to ask my ex-wife and kids what they saw, Dad's a workaholic, and when he's not working, he's tired, grumpy, miserable. And I'm pretty sure my ex-wife had some pretty choice nicknames for me at the time to describe how I was feeling. So was it the sole reason? No, there was other factors at play. Did it play a role? Absolutely. If I wasn't there 100%, or if I thought my only job was to work hard, turn up and put food on the table and be there on, you know, the weekends and before and after work, it, you know, parenting is much more than that. Relationships take a lot more than that. And so from that point of view, yeah, if I wasn't my best self and I couldn't be for wife and or kids, that's going to put pressure on relationships.
Well, there's a lot of pressure, as you just mentioned, on men. They still see themselves as having that, you know, role to provide, to be the strength, to be, you know, the person who just carries on through whatever adversity. So why do you think it's so tough for men when they come across an emotional challenge like a relationship or separation from their children?
Yeah, I think a couple of things, right? Like it's really hard to be what we cannot see. And if we've never been taught, then how would we have ever learned? And this speaks quite directly to role modeling. So if what we have been role modeled is to man up, to suck it up and to soldier on, not open up or show or experience or express vulnerability or open up and have meaningful conversations and connections, then of course, that's how we're going to behave. And it's going to take a lot of energy and a lot of effort to turn that around. When you think about the impact that that can have on the next generation, it's going to take them a lot more energy and effort to be able to dispel what they have seen, what they have experienced, and how they've been brought up. You know, some of my earliest beliefs about masculinity I can remember were formed when I was like 4 or 5 years of age. And although there's a lot of great work being done, there's a lot more education in younger age groups now, there's still this fear of mine that we end up leapfrogging because they're still being role modeled an old form of masculinity. And so, you know, if we think about what we need to teach children and what we need to encourage them to do, because we're all going to make mistakes and none of this stuff's easy, it's be brave and be curious, right? Because, you know, if you can look outside the framework of what is immediately known to you, and by that I mean male, intergenerational male masculinity and role modeling, we have to look broader at that in terms of where we can actually get our role modeling from. So it might be teachers, it might be coaches, it might be uncles or other men in and around, in particular our young boys, also just as relevant for young women.
More often than not, role modeling is now peer-to-peer, which is a big concern because if what you're saying is that men look to other men for role modeling and they're not finding it at home, what does masculinity look like in the 21st century?
It's a good question. And I think, you know, it's up for debate at the moment. It's under the microscope and we have a very, very real opportunity here to redefine what it means to be a man, to try and absolve some of this conflict. And by that, I mean what we've been shown as archetypes and modern masculine or historical masculinity and where we're going and how we can actually change that. Beyond that, though, you know, there's a lot of chat around toxic masculinity and we're talking about negative and harmful beliefs and behaviours. And so whilst we're at this inflection point, and I say inflection point because I think, you know, we're talking about conflict and we're talking about confusion, but we're also talking about a lot of opportunity. We do have the opportunity to redefine what that looks like. break down and normalize conversations around mental health, around opening up the idea of vulnerability being a strength to be able to help others and seek help, because we know it's a major challenge, especially when it comes to men and boys. We know that one third of men don't feel they can open up and talk about their emotions because they fear it being seen as unmanly. And that's actually higher at 50% for those aged between 18 to 24. And so those numbers are actually going the wrong way. We are at a point where gender rebalancing, which we're all supportive of, has created an environment where men are kind of, you know, losing their role in terms of how it's historically been defined, you know, as the worker, as the breadwinner, to focus on jobs. And all of this stuff is shifting. And if what you've been shown and taught is one way, and you quickly have to shift and go another, then, you know, there's a lot of adjustment and confusion. And I hear it every week. I listen to hundreds of blokes tell me stories around how they find it difficult. And a good example of that was a guy that was out dating a little while ago, and he was going back into the dating market, and he was on his first date. And I said, "How'd it go?" He said, "It was a disaster." I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, I didn't know whether I was meant to open the door, whether she wanted to open the door. I didn't know if she wanted me to open the door for her, if she wanted to be independent, you know." And there's even this confusion between being courteous and trying to be, I suppose, overly thoughtful as to how women want to be treated and how they should be treated. And so from that point of view, yeah, rule number one, just don't be a dick, be a good human.
Even women are confused, though. I mean, I still enjoy having a bit of chivalry in my life. The one thing that stood out for me during this conversation is that toxicity comes in all relationships in all forms, and I don't think it's gender specific. So I've seen toxic behavior in women, but we don't seem to be talking about that. We're focusing on this toxic masculinity. A conversation I had with Luke Taylor months ago, and he said, we are at risk of saying that all masculinity is toxic. So redefining that is probably more urgent than ever. And like you say, we're all confused. But isn't it just about having a conversation? I mean, if a man doesn't know if a lady wants him to open the door or pull out her chair or bring over, isn't that just a matter of asking?
Or trial and error. Like, hopefully we're old enough and mature enough to kind of learn from our mistakes. You don't like flowers? Fine, I won't get them again. You don't want me to open the door? Great, I won't do that. But there is, right? Like, for a long time, I sat on the fence on this very issue. I don't want to talk about masculinity. It is fraught with danger. And then I realized I'm already in the thick of it. You know, what we try and do through the charity is drive positive masculine male role modeling to try and rule out some of those dangerous behaviors and beliefs and archetypes. And this idea of being an upstander, not a bystander, you know, calling behaviors out, setting examples, and not just for ourselves as men, but as the men around us, the people that watch and observe us, whether they be male, female, and everything else in between, but in particular, our kids. You put that into the workplace, right, where many workplaces are still high percentage men, and you've got Peter Pans and boys that have never grown up or haven't adjusted or don't think about the context of this in a workplace environment. And you've now got psychosocial risks and hazards that are legislated that are specifically dealing with how people operate in the workplace and how they feel. And so you take all of these social pressures and norms and then you put them into this workplace pressure cooker. You know, it is fraught with danger, but at the center of this is what you said. It's learning to be a good human, considerate of others, and through conversation, connecting with other humans to actually open up the, well, what do you want? Like, how does that make you feel? Like, what do you need? How can I help? These are all questions that are probably part of everyday conversations, or if they're not, they should be.
How have you navigated this space with your children?
Yeah, I've got two boys and a girl. So two boys and a girl in that age, all teenagers. I have been highly conscious of the fact that what I am trying to do, whether it's through communities, workplace, or the work we do with the charity, and I try and get them as involved as much as possible, is showcase positive role modeling. I know that if I tell them, suggest something or ask something of them, it's unlikely to be done, whether it's the garbage bins or thinking about the way that masculinity is portrayed. And you have that conversation with a 17-year-old boy, it's going to take a while to stick. But if you've got others around you that are showing them by doing, it's a much more powerful proposition. And so for me, that's not just about my boys. It's about male role modeling for my daughter, because I know that whether she's conscious of it or not, she's looking at all of these behaviors. She's identifying the good, the bad, and the ugly, and she's registering those, and they create her boundaries and her parameters for her decision making on how she approaches things as simple as relationships. So it's an ongoing consideration for me. I try not to overthink it. I try to be as authentic as possible, but I also try and use the guide of, you know, what would a good human being do here? Just as a simple rule of thumb.
It has been hugely insightful for me, and an emotional roller coaster behind the scenes, just going through all of those stories which you tell so well. Tim Hewson, I've got a feeling you might be a regular on What We Teach Our Children from now on. Thank you so much for joining me.
Great. Thanks for the opportunity. Love chatting.
Conversations like that remind us that courage isn't about silence, it's about speaking up. Tim Hewson and the team at Mongrels Men are showing us what true leadership looks like, giving mental health a face, a voice, and a safe place to be seen. By creating brave spaces, Tim's helping men connect, not just to each other, but to their families, their communities, and most importantly, to themselves. When men feel supported to express, heal, and belong, we all benefit. If our children grow up seeing that vulnerability isn't weakness, it's strength in its truest forms, the world will be a much better place. You'll find all the links to Mongrels Men and Tim's mental health resources in the show notes. And if today's episode encourages you to start a conversation with someone you care about, please do. One honest chat can change or even save a life. If this conversation has raised issues for you, there's help available. Please search for mental health services in your current city, community, and country. In Australia, you'll find Lifeline and Beyond Blue offering services online and, of course, over the phone. For more stories about connection, courage, and compassion, subscribe to What We Teach Our Children and share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. That's it for me this week. But let's try and be the change we want to see in the world. Until next time.